Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's matchups episode versus the Cowboys. We're looking at the offense in this case. If you didn't listen to the defensive episode, please go back, take a listen to that. Some great stuff with co-host Frazier Tafar about controlling the run game, about how the Ravens ought to approach the pass rush in this game, and how they need to limit CeeDee Lamb, of course. So joining me, of course, as always, is co-host Frazier Tafar. Frazier, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken. Glad to be back for the offensive show. A couple things that we need to address and make sure that the Ravens focus on for this week against the Cowboys.
Yeah, I found us being a little bit probably too hard, I think, on Zach Orr in the first episode. And, you know, my big theme of mine has been adjustments for the week. We look back at what had happened with Mike McDonald in his first two games. We'd see a lot of difficulty making adjustments, particularly in that Miami loss. Yep. In week two of 2022 was one of the real ugly losses in team history in terms of blowing a big lead. And, Orr is moving along, and I'm hoping that, you know, there isn't a need for an adjustment that we miss on in this game that we end up regretting, because this is it's a week to week league, and there need to be some things that work out. And obviously in week one, continually beaten by pick and rub routes. In week two, continually beaten by Bowers and Adams, and with more or less of similar defenses where they weren't showing a lot of different looks to Minshew, I felt. So it's we definitely want to move over the offensive side of the ball for this episode. And why don't you start us off?
Yeah, sure. So I think the main first point I have this week is play action needs to be a staple this week. And the only way you do that is by establishing the run, showing that Henry isn't just a run key when he gets in the game. We need to be multiple in that sense. I think I've noticed that the Ravens have tried to do that. There's been a couple of possessions where they brought in Justice Hill right after they brought in Henry, and they ran the draw, but it wasn't blocked up well. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to show opportunities that, okay, we're not just running when Henry's in the game. We're not just passing when Hill's in the game.
Yeah.
Exactly. So showing play action fake in those situations when Henry is genius to me, but it's the effectiveness of running with Henry that needs to continue to progress in order to make things work on play action.
Right. And I'm with you on that. Henry gets the ball a high percentage of the time when he's in the game. It was 19 out of 30 this last week, while Hill got the ball on, I think it was 6 times out of 35, a combination of receiving and running the football. That's some of that. It's still not telegraphing things, because the play is more telegraphed by down and distance. Yes. So if Hill is in there at the end of a half and they're having to drive down the field, as the Ravens were, then it's not really a tell that the Ravens are going to pass that they have Hill in the game. It's just, you know, you got a good pass blocker who can also help you out in the pass game. They used Hill 15 times on set and chip opportunities in this game that I want to get back to. It's one of the points I'm making, but I'm in complete agreement. Play action needs to be a much bigger part of the game. I have a point that overlaps very closely, so I'll announce it, and then we can go back and forth a couple more times on this, is that I think they need to work off the mesh point between Jackson and Henry much more than they have so far. Ideally, I think that would go from the pistol the way the 2019 offense was run. So that means Lamar turns to either side in order to fake or pull the ball on a read option handoff to Henry. And then he becomes an edge threat while Henry becomes a middle threat. So you think of it as more of something you do in a gap situation, where a sidecar is more what you do in a zone situation. And you can actually run it either way, but ideally,
how we work Gus. How we use Gus Edwards.
Yeah, for sure. Think of it that way if you want. I mean, Gus didn't run a lot of pistol. I mean, they haven't run a lot of pistol really since 2019. So it's starting in 2020, they made Jackson really the middle threat in their run game. So they
would say more so in terms of 2018, the way they ran that.
Yeah.
That was very effective, because Lamar was a lot more slimmer. Obviously, wasn't the passing threat he is now. So running that downhill run style with Henry, first of all, he's going with momentum towards the line of scrimmage. Defense has to make a decision. Do we go outside or contain the inside run? But some of the defense I've noticed have adjusted well to that read option in the pistol. They just send a blitzer on the outside, and they're able to cover all gaps and also get past the tight end blockers, because most of the time we have the split zone motion with the tight end coming across the formation to give Lamar a lead blocker on those plays. I think defenses have adjusted to that. So contrary to your point, I think the most effective way to manipulate the linebackers might be in sidecar.
Stay in sidecar.
Yes.
It's a very good point you make. I will say the Dallas interior guys are extremely movable, and they have been so far in these first games. In fact, the Saints, they only had 11 completions in that 44-19 win. 11 complete passes.
Oh my God.
Derek Carr, they ran the ball 39 times for, I don't remember how many yards. It was about 5 yards of carry, though, they had. So they basically just ran the ball all over Dallas. Dallas could do nothing effective to stop it. And it's mostly on their interior guys. Their edge setters, they're not bad. Parsons is not a long guy. So that's one thing that I really like about that. But in the case of the Henry Jackson mesh point, I'm really not talking about as much about the edge defender. Sorry, as much about the front four or front five, if they ever show that. It's really a front four with Dallas. I'm talking about manipulating those off-ball linebackers, getting them to take extra read steps downhill, getting them to do additional things, and getting an opportunity for Lamar to throw out of that. And you don't actually have to go all the way to the mesh point to threaten the mesh point. All you have to do is have Henry moving forward in the middle of the field. Yeah. Basically, with Lamar making any kind of a nuanced move to potentially hand the ball off to him, any gesture. Yeah, I throw it into a general category called forward-facing fakes. It's not traditional play action where you turn your back, although it could be. And it's not a all the way into the mesh point play action, what I would consider like a full RPO kind of look. The family of forward-facing fakes can be from the most half-hearted crapola you'll ever see to some pretty darn good and bitey, as I call them, inside linebacker fakes that can really get people moving downhill. But the Ravens really have not taken advantage of that. And with all their receiving talent, they have a tight end. And I think it's unfortunate that they really haven't done it to date.
Yeah, and I think back to your point about pistol working to manipulate the middle linebackers, that's where this next phase, we've been through so many phases of this offense. I think this is where we go back to where we came from in the sense of our development. Once we get back to pistol, the turn your back play action needs to be a staple, because this week we saw the outside zone and the stretches working on the outside. Those play fakes can come hand in hand when faking a stretch, Lamar reaccumulating the field and being able to throw to the outside guys. And this is exactly what we brought Derrick Henry in for. We haven't had a real running back threat since 2020 and J.K. Dobbins, really. And I think now we have the opportunity to not have all the attention on Lamar in the run game. Contrary to most fans' belief, running Henry into the ground isn't the answer.
Right. I agree with that.
So using him as a decoy is also as effective as running the ball with him.
I agree. They have not really used him also as a pass blocker so far this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the time he's not even chipping. He's leaving. There was one beautiful 7-man rush where Henry was part of blocking it up, but he's had very few pass blocking snaps even so far this year. He's typically been going out and been somewhere in the pattern himself, which where he also obviously has value. It's just, you know, if there's anybody who can throw an effective chip block on this current Ravens team, other than maybe Patrick Ricard would be the next level up from Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's outstanding pass blocker.
And I think they're preserved. It's almost like a snap count thing with him in the sense of, I know what their ultimate goal for him is. They need to preserve him for later in the season. So then we can really start punishing these defenses when they've been through a calluses of a whole year. When we are able to get to that point, we will stop hearing all the noise about Derrick Henry. I think right now we got a little taste of what he can do later in the season. That short pass that he made into like what a 20-yard gain out of nothing, breaking a tackle, and then also the iconic stiff arm that he had on the long run. Yep. I mean, we got it last week. It was unfortunate that we didn't come out with the win, but in terms of what to expect from Derrick Henry, I think we know what the blueprint is. The pieces around us just have to continue to execute at a high level. Offensive line.
Completely agree in terms of getting what they'd hoped for from Derrick Henry. It's in terms of the numbers carries, it's the right number. In terms of the amount of time on the field, it's probably the right number. I know that's just heresy to a large section of fans and whatnot that he'll outsnaps Henry 35-30 and you guys don't know what you're doing. Well, the truth is, it's arrested Derrick Henry is a tremendous weapon. And when you're not really going to use him in the passing game, and Hill is, first of all, the better weapon probably in the passing game, although it might be close. And Hill also is a very talented pass blocker. That's a great time to sit Derrick Henry. And yes, the other times you have him in there for 30 snaps, he gets the ball 19 damn times. What do you want? I don't want to see a 300 carry season from Derrick Henry. I'd like to see 240 to 250. If you got 255 carries, that'd be 17 carries a game, and maybe 1.5 additional targets, catches. Maybe two targets, and you know, catches at 1.5, targets at 2. How about that?
Okay, fair.
Would be ideal in terms of additional touches for him. But he'll be an amazing threat if he can do that for the Ravens in terms of what they bring to the table. And you know, it's a two-back scheme right now. They really have to get a significant amount of snaps out of Hill. When Mitchell comes back and it becomes a three-back scheme again, which we certainly hope is going to happen, they are really going to have something. If he's 92% of what he was last year, and that might be a stretch, then he'll be great. Yeah, we might have lost Frazier. This happens sometimes. I'm sure he'll be back. I'm going to go on to my second point here. Frazier, just let me know when you're back on air here. The one thing I want to see the Ravens do additionally, that's a matchup element, is adjust as necessary to minimize the impact of the edge rushers and Parsons. So they have DeMarcus Lawrence. They have Micah Parsons as the primary edge rushers for Dallas. And obviously part of minimizing their impact is getting into favorable down and distance situations, staying ahead of the sticks. But you can also do other things to get them out of the game. One is run at them. Frazier's back, and we're talking about my next point, which is about minimizing the impact of the edge rushers and Micah Parsons in particular, Marcus Lawrence, probably to a lesser extent. But they need to run right at those guys. I mean, Parsons, for one thing, he is a powerful ball of muscle, that's for sure, but he's not a long guy. And if you want to find a guy that Falele at a zone blocking method, or even a player like Rosengarten, who's not exceptionally long himself for a tackle anyway, could have more effect, go to the run game for a player like Parsons. Lean on that guy. Get to his chest plate. And it's a big ask for a player like Falele, who has not typically gotten to anybody's chest plate because of a fear of using his hands at all. But whatever the case might be, this is a good game to try and run the ball a little bit, tire down Micah Parsons a little bit with some 320 to 370 pound guys leaning on him. And I hope they'll do that. And the other way to neutralize Parsons is in the pass game with chips and sets. And so they have lots of ability to do that. In fact, they did a lot in the Raiders game with using 30 total chip and set blocks on 34 pass plays. That's 0.88 of their 5.0 eligible receivers per play committed to pass blocking. So you can do it that way. I would kind of prefer if we don't see Hill 10 times a set blocker and 5 times a chipper in this game. I think he can deliver you additional value in the pattern that they're probably not completely tapping into. And I don't think also the other real problem with the Ravens right now is they're lacking that second gadget player. Yeah. So they're thrusting all of that on Flowers, and they don't really have another guy right now. Deonte Hardy would be the guy, but he's been hurt, and they've just played 5 snaps on offense the whole year. So they need to find that other gadget guy. And I hope they're not just getting him back when Mitchell comes back.
Yep. And I think someone as the gadget guy should be Tylan Wallace.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Wallace, I think he should get the opportunity just to be the guy going in the jet motion, bringing attention to the defense, and let Zay be a number one receiver, because it's getting to the point where it's comical. Why are we putting him in these situations? The screens, I get it, because he's able to make people miss and get to open space, but there that just leaves a lot more on the bone for him and the regular pass set. So I don't think that's the most best way to use him, like we mentioned. But in terms of the pass blocking, to your point, running at them will slow down Parsons and Lawrence, and the Saints proved that last week. We should be able to get the shots that we are looking for, especially if we can get the run game going and, like we mentioned, play action. I think the main thing I'm looking for, and this goes into my second point, I anticipate a lot of one-on-one coverage on the outside, and we need these wide receivers to win those one-on-one battles. We know Bateman can get open at the top of the route. We know Zay has enough shiftiness to get open. Consistency is the key right now. Lamar is going to be able to find these guys given the opportunity in terms of ample time and space and opportunity sets. Can they win when it matters and also continue to gain positive points with Lamar in terms of trust? Bateman lost a little bit last week on that interception where it did hit his hands and he did cough it up. But continuing to make progress in that category is going to be key for the receivers this week.
I think I'm not sure what we'll see from Dallas. Dallas obviously has a reputation as being a team that wants to really rely on man coverage. So that's been true, I would say, for years. But in terms of what we actually see, I think a lot of that is really dictated by Lamar. So we may see more zone coverage. But whatever we're seeing from Dallas, whatever Lamar gets to see from Dallas, he needs to react appropriately. So if you get a ton of man looks, well, then try and figure out how you can make use of that. And oftentimes, it's going to be a different set of things. If you get zone looks, that frees Zay Flowers and his suddenness to find you space. You know, you've got to look to play action to find space for your tight ends. But you've got options either way, and you need to take options that are appropriate. The other thing about man coverage, and this is the thing, you've got to punish them with a bunch of Lamar scrambles if they're really yes. turning their back to him. So there will always be players, even in a man coverage scheme, you know, then the onus is very much on Dallas to provide a spy on that play.
Yep.
But there's still ways to take care of the spy. And in particular, if you're willing to get downfield, like, I don't know if you saw the really comical play this last week where both Fa'alele and McCary got beaten to the outside on the same play, beaten very badly. It was clearly a designed pass play, but Linderbaum had success blocking at the line of scrimmage, passed his guy off, and then moved into level two and moved 5 yards down the field. Then he goes, oh crap, wait, this is a pass play. He moves back to the line of scrimmage, you know, clearly indicating that it had to be a pass play. Okay. And then he did that just as Lamar was taking off. But there are ways you can time that up. If you're going to have some really good designed quarterback runs out of pass sets, you know, quarterback draws, as you say, then you can get people down the field, whether it might be the running back like a Justice Hill or even a Henry or the, you know, your center or whoever's got the bubble over them in terms of the line of scrimmage.
Yep. And really, if we do see man coverage, I am anticipating a lot of bunch formations to make confusion on who's got who. And I don't see that kind of adjustment from Monken right now. I don't know what it is about this year. I think some of the buzz that's been going on is that Harbaugh is suppressing some of these coordinators in terms of what they can do or what they can call in philosophy. I think, I don't know how much weight that has, because Todd Monken was a throw the ball around the yard kind of guy at Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then he comes to Baltimore and he brings some of that aspect, but it seems like he's not exactly who he was in Georgia. So
I will call that a very serious accusation. Okay, I wouldn't even begin to make that accusation of Harbaugh. And I do really put the lack of adaptation. I honestly have to put that on Orr the first 2 weeks. I mean, Harbaugh can scream in the headset about why are we still getting beat on this? We need to find a way to rotate coverages to do things differently. But I guarantee you, he's not saying everything's fine, just stick with that, to Zach Orr over what went wrong with bunch formations and with Bowers and Adams in those first 2 weeks. I guarantee you he's not doing that. So I don't think he's, and if you're talking about the offense, you know, one of the things we haven't seen from Monken is the adaptation to 12 personnel that we've been calling for the whole year. I mean, he used a fewer numbers of heavies against the Raiders in the second week when, you know, basically dropping Odell Beckham from your roster puts you at minus one in receivers, or maybe minus a half, if you want to think of it that way, because he's not playing a top receiver, but he's a guy who provides you receiving value during the season. Mm-hmm. And you have to replace that at a tight end where they had fewer opportunities, but tremendous success throwing the ball, but they haven't got the extra tight ends on the field so far this year on a per snap basis to really do that. I mean, last week it was 63% Andrews and 49% Likely. So that means at the most, and I guarantee you this was not the case, they played 12% 12 personnel. Okay, 12 or 13. Right there, that's a betrayal of the fan contract I thought we had about how much 12 personnel the Ravens are going to do. You know, I'm joking about that,
right,
about that particular contract. Yeah,
I think the main thing, I don't think that might be it's not a Monken adjustment thing. I think it's a Lamar being overwhelmed with the options on the field, because he has trust in Zay Flowers, he has trust in Isaiah Likely, mm-hmm. and he has trust with Mark already built into the system.
Yep.
There has been times where we saw Lamar airmail Andrews in the second quarter on that deep ball. He missed him. And then he had Mark stretch out for a wide open pass in the second level. It seems like they've not lost their touch, but the suddenness just to get the ball to him without thinking has lacked. If I want to key in one more point, he had it was a seam route by Andrews. Linebacker already had his head turned. As a quarterback, if he's not able to see you throw the ball, I think that's wide open in the National Football League. And also it's Mark Andrews. So to not see Lamar Jackson throw that ball to him and give him an opportunity, but he gave Isaiah Likely that opportunity on the deep ball where it was overthrown and everything. It was hard to see that because I know what kind of guy Andrew is, and it's upsetting to see that him get phased out of the offense. And the way that we are able to not phase him out is have these sets where it's either Isaiah or Andrews. Having them both on the field just gives Lamar that much more, I don't want to say anxiety, but pressure to feed his targets because he has three guys that he has go-to on the field.
Okay. I hear that. And going back to week one against Kansas City, Andrews was totally erased by what Spagnuolo did defensively. They bracketed him a lot. They covered him. They had a great plan B because Likely took off on them because of that and really made them pay. They punished them for the brackets on Mark Andrews. That's really what I want to see. And I'm really not convinced at this point that Andrews or Likely is the number one or has to be a number one. I think honestly that Lamar can work with both of them, but it's, you notice the overthrow. One of the things about the Andrews overthrow, which was in Q2 338 or something, it was in quarter two. I may have the time wrong, but it was a overthrow on third down and it was under pressure. So
yes. There
are going to be a certain number of those that are under pressure. What I really don't want to see, I don't want to see it on a ball out quick, and I don't want to see it on a ample time and space where a ball is not thrown to try and give the receiver a chance to catch the football.
Yes.
So if you're going to throw the ball to Bateman, and particularly he's been the guy who I think Lamar has shown the most lack of long ball trust in. Mm-hmm. Try and throw him to an open part of the field. There are open always on deep routes, whatever you're running, 7, 8, 9. There are open parts of that field that you can throw, you can lead the receiver into. The receiver worth his salt in terms of tracking the football is going to be able to know that the quarterback wants to throw to the open space. And that's something, you build with your normal practice and whatnot, but they'll go out and they'll get the football if you just throw it, I call it a gap away because I have the 1-2-3-4-5 system of if you're on the left hash, just throw it over to the left numbers and they'll go get the football. You really don't have to worry about hitting them in the stride on their current vector. You need to throw it away from the defender, leave it out there and let them go make a play on the football. And a lot of times that's going to result in a penalty. A lot of times that's going to result in a catch. And very, very rarely, if you're throwing the ball like that, is it going to result in an interception? But it's much harder to throw that touch pass that's over the defender, an up and down throw, to drop it right in the bucket to the receiver. You're usually better off allowing your receiver to track the football where there is more option of vertical break in his route. Okay, meaning he can take it a little deeper if he tracks the football that way. He can come back a little bit if he tracks the football that way. But you're throwing to an open part of the field. That's where I have had problems. And I've looked at Lamar this year. There's probably been three or four throws already where I felt that's a long incomplete where there was a spot on the field that he just needs to let the receiver go get the football.
Yep, very, very true. And I agree with your point there. I think the Lamar deep ball has been a touchy subject, especially the last couple of years. Real only deep ball that we've seen him complete is that DeSean Jackson.
Yeah.
Deep ball in Jacksonville.
In Jacksonville, yeah.
Which was great. Amazing throw. But the consistency just hasn't been there for that type of deep bomb. And not to throw it back, but Joe Flacco was the key staple of who he was. Deep ball, being able to just throw it up there, give the receiver a chance. We just haven't seen that from Lamar as a quarterback, and that's probably the last step in his evolution, really.
Yeah, it'll be nice. I mean, Lamar really wants to see the route in front of him. And it doesn't mean that's a bad thing, but he's just got to be willing to let pretty much everyone have a chance to go get the football. I do think, by the way, he's done better in having a broader set of receivers that he truly trusts, particularly on extended plays.
Yes.
I think he's better than he was earlier on in his career where Andrews was the primary guy. It was actually hurting Andrews' production to get these marginal targets. But I completely agree with you. Let's see. I talked about this. The other thing I want to say about the Parsons thing and slowing him down, which I'm going back a point, I believe, is that I think we'll see more Rosengarten at right tackle this week.
Yes.
That we might see a 2-1 relationship. I don't think they're completely ready to hand him the reins totally, but I think we'll see less McCary this week because for a lot of reasons, McCary really hasn't played well. He's not a great matchup for Parsons specifically. Parsons isn't a long guy. So from that perspective, he's not like Jones and Crosby in terms of being a guy who can totally take advantage of who McCary is. But he is a guy who's you know, a hellacious, quick pass blocker. And it might be a guy that Rosengarten's feet you want to give a trial against.
Yeah, and Rosengarten looked great, especially on the two-minute drive when they went down the field. It's really looked good in spots for him, and it looks like it could come together, especially later in the season, week 10, 12. He should be where he needs to be. And hopefully, when that manifests itself, McCary can hopefully kick in next to him at guard and get Falele out of there, because apparently Ben Cleveland is an option at right guard right now, according to John Harbaugh.
He is an option?
Isn't an option. Yes. That's not even close, apparently.
I was saying, did something new come out today? Because I'm very excited about it, if that is true.
Yeah. We're dreaming at this point about Ben Cleveland.
It does almost feel like a deeper hole is being dug each time. But I mean, at some point, they're going to have to make that change. I mean, and even if you say, okay, we're going to try some rotation now here, it's not working out completely with Daniel, but we don't want to give up on him. Let's do some. I mean, that's the first natural step. Then one outplays the other and you go to him. And anyway, is what it is.
The quote unquote evaluation process is it's in question right now.
All right. I'm sorry. Did we miss one of your points? Cause I think you started on this, so we should be done, right?
We're good.
Okay. Outstanding. Frazier, always a lot of fun doing this show with you. Some great spirited talk, and you really know your football. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You guys can reach me at @X/Twitter at @F_Rave8. That's @F_RAVE8.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. If you'd like to do something nice for the show, hit subscribe, like, et cetera, et cetera. If you're watching this on YouTube, give us a little bit of traffic to the show. And if you don't mind, write a 50-word review. We're always appreciate a 50-word 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for listening. And for Frazier Tabar, this is Ken McCusick, and we'll talk to you next week on Matchups.